Hello and welcome to CoreCast. I'm your host, Tim.
And this is Sahil. Welcome everybody to a brand new exciting episode of CoreCast. Before we get started, if you haven't already, do join the Discord channel so you can ask us questions there and get to them there. And if you're watching us on YouTube, where we do this every Tuesday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, ask questions on the YouTube channel. So further ado, let's get to it. So Tim, remember last week we were talking about particles being doomed, and so if you all haven't checked out that episode and want more details, please check it out. We basically go through how the whole notion of particles itself is a bit flaky, and more details are in that episode. Given that particles are doomed, I guess, like, what does one do? Like, I mean, is that the end of physics? Like, are we done? What's going on?
You know, when we talk about particle physics, it sounds like we're all about the particles. It seems to be maybe a bit of a misnomer, even though we are all about the particles, but we think of particles as a tool to help us study stuff. So last week, we described how particles are kind of physically doomed because they don't exist forever. They will decay away, just like our universe, probably and in a fate that kind of just into obsolescence in some ways. This ill-definedness is reflected from the theoretical side, that particles aren't totally well-defined. Then a question is, like, what's better? What is the alternative? In quantum physics, we have this notion of wave-particle duality that gives us a little bit of a hint. Particles can be thought of as little discrete units, like a ball-like shape, even though it's not totally accurate, or like bullets. Or the alternative is, you know, we can think of them as kind of like waves. And the best analogy, I guess, is just waves in the ocean, right? And the ocean is made of water. So it turns out in particle physics, we have this analogous concept. It's kind of like the ocean that makes the waves. And we call these the fields. The fields, just like the ocean, they make up these waves of, you know, movements. And these movements, I guess, are what we call particles.
So are you saying, so instead of thinking of them as like individual pieces, like particles, as like being very well defined, localized in a particular spot, you can think of them as more sort of spread out and a little bit, I guess, in terms of this like ocean that makes up. It's actually, but then this begs the question that like waves themselves in the context of an ocean is more of like an emergent phenomenon where it's like based on our ability to see patterns, we classify particles, a bunch of particles together that form the shape of a wave as a wave. So the wave itself like is made up of particles. Is that the same with fields? Like what are actually fields? Like, yeah, how do I think about that?
So the analogy, water waves from the ocean, it's, yeah, like you said, it's very much emergent, right? Like waves in some sense kind of don't really exist because like where does one wave end, another wave begin? So there's a little bit of that definitely for fields in particle physics. It's like, well, where does one particle end and another particle begin? And that in some sense is very real. But there's something that's distinctively quantum mechanical, is that the particle numbers are quantized in many cases. So you can kind of really count individually. Is there one wave, two waves, or three waves? And these are not really analogies in like water waves, so to speak. But this sort of quantumness, this discreteness, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, is the reason why particle feels so real. It gives this notion of particles a real punch, right? Like I can count the number of protons in my hands. I mean, it would be a lot, but like I could kind of literally count it now. And the reason I can count it now, because that property of the number of protons stay consistent. So in that way, it doesn't feel like a wave, like what the hell is a proton, right? It feels like a unit of object. But it turns out that, like we mentioned before last time, this notion that the number of protons kind of stay consistent, it has to do with the way we interact with them, because we kind of live in a very low energy world. You know, no matter how hard we try, we don't throw a lot of energy into particles. So in some sense, these notions that the number of particles stays constant, it's also approximate. the notion of fields kind of gets around that. It's more generalized. Like, we don't have to rely on the fact that we're able to count particles. We don't need to. We have this more general notion. That's kind of like a factory of particles, if you like.
I see. So before we go a little bit deeper into that, I just want to give the audience a little bit sense of scale. When you talk about low energy, like, what is that? Like, low energy, like, relative to what? It seems like, you know, when people say, oh, that person's high energy, like, high energy, highly energetic, you know, like, what? Yeah, like, how? What do you mean by low energy?
Yeah, I think it's more like low energy compared to what the universe is capable. Right? Mm. And pretty much everything that humans do or animals do or even the sun does, this just isn't very much energy. Like, we might think of maybe some very high energy stuff, like, you know, the TNT exploding. That seems like an awful lot of energy. But if you really think deeply, what happens when TNT explode, right? It's a chemical reaction. That means electrons are jumping around. But these are just movement of particles. That's not doing very much. Right, even in things like fission, right, like a uranium breaks into different kinds of particles, there isn't like a catastrophic change or like a significant change on the types of particles that are involved. And even fusion in the sun, it's not doing that much. So when we talk about low energy, these are kind of low energy stuff. The kinds of high energy that I'm referring to are kind of like the energies when the Big Bang just began, when the particles are coming in and out of existence. You have so much energy that exotic particles that we don't see in everyday lives get pop in and out of existence. Like, particles constantly can change their identity with one another, new particles coming in, old particles can interact with one another. So that's the kind of high energy that we're talking about. And compared to that, everything that we have in the universe right now is pretty much low energy stuff.
That makes sense. That makes sense. So if I took your answer and take what you said also previously before that, in terms of the context of particle number, are you saying that, like, the reason, like, protons, electrons, neutrons, and go to this whole particle zoo of different particles makes sense is because we're currently in a low energy state, like the way we interact with the world, low energy. So we can actually count. We're not throwing so much energy at, like, each proton or whatever particle we're measuring, such that we change kind of the nature of it, like particles popping in out of existence. Like, if I measure a proton, like, I know a proton's there, maybe there's a small probability some particles that pop in and out of existence, but negligible at best. I can basically tell there's a proton there, et cetera, et cetera. Is that the idea?
Yeah, pretty much. And thought is, and if you follow this ocean analogy, like, it's not really a good analogy anymore, because in the ocean, you know that on like a windy day, you got these crazy waves, right? And you see surfers riding like a 30-foot wave, right? That's high energy. In the universe right now, you probably got a tiny little trickle, right? It's not so much of an ocean, but like a pool of, like, I don't know, like a frozen jello or whatever. Tiny little wiggles. That's what we're talking about. The particles that we see are just teeny, weeny, weeny little wiggles on top of these things we call fields, and that's why we can kind of count them one at a time.
So if I imagine, like, space-time filled with this, like, say, field, I don't know, we have to also describe, like, what a field is and how does it relate to the different particles, but just say for a particle you have a field, I can, and it's like, just if I'm visualizing it, it's kind of this, like, gel-like structure with small little, like, waves, and I can count sort of the waves rather than it being, like, very chaotic and hard to distinguish one wave to the next, to a reasonable approximation.
And that just is by happenstance. It just happens that the universe right now it's very cold. It's not very hot. There's no crazy things going on. There's not like a storm happening in the universe. So that's why, in some sense, that's why the notion of particles kind of makes sense right now.
I see. That makes sense. So I guess now I want to kind of, like, so there's this abstract notion of a field. In my day-to-day, I don't really feel like I interact with fields. Maybe there's sort of an electromagnetic field, but in terms of the way I was taught physics, it's taught in terms of, like, particles, unless you go to, you know, higher level in graduate school and stuff, then you talk about fields. But how can we relate to the audience, like, how a particle, like, how there's so many different particles, and how this relates to this notion of a field? Like, how can I, like, you know, how can I translate like things I've learned in physics about like different particles to like fields? Like what are, yeah, just kind of want to get a little bit more intuition around that.
Yeah, the notion of field is not very intuitive. It's more generalized concept. On another aspect, you can also think of them as kind of two sides of the same coin. Why is that useful, right? Why is thinking about fields useful? Why not just at particles if they kind of all describe the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. So for example, there's some phenomenon that happens with particles that are kind of hard to explain otherwise. There's this concept of, for example, indistinguishability, meaning that if you have a proton here and you have a proton there, they have exactly the same properties. And that's a little bit strange if you think about it. You bought two balls from Amazon, it's got bound to be something different. Like how can they be exactly the same? But particles, on the other hand, they are literally the same. Like there's no, other than the position, of course, like every single property, the mass, the charge, and that works for every single particle, like electrons, protons, and all that. And when you're faced with things like this, you're kind of like, that's weird, right? From the perspective of particles, they're just indistinguishable. You either just accept it as it is, or if you think of it in terms of fields, then it starts to make sense, right? Because there is only just one field. You can kind of think of protons like the proton field, although proton is made of some other stuff. So in the same way, you can think of the proton field as being made of other field as well. So maybe that's not the best example, but like, for example, okay. Light is made of the electromagnetic field, probably something we're very familiar with. You can feel it when you feel static electricity, just electrons moving around. So no matter where you feel this electromagnetic field, it's the same feeling. The properties don't change. So these hints, you know, it's best explained by, you know, one common denominator. That common denominator is the notion of field.
So before we delve into this, I want to ask about one thing you mentioned about indistinguishability of particles and take a slightly devil's advocate side of, or an argument against that skeptical point of view. How do we know that they're the exact same? Like, what if there are errors in measuring device? I mean, sure, if you like measure to the charge of like two different protons, you're probably going to get different numbers. So how do you like know that they're actually the same?
Very good question. And that has to do with how the mathematics, like the combinations, when you count them, whether two things are the same, distinguishable or indistinguishable, the statistics change. Mm. So you imagine this. Imagine you have two particles in two positions. If they are the same, there's only one possibility because you just number of particles, right? But if they're different, they could either be, you know, one type on the left side, one type on the right side, or flipped over.
Mm-hmm.
So these kinds of counting exercise actually affects physical systems, right? Mm. And when we do experiments, we can measure how many ways there are to arrange things. And you do find out that, for example, if you let's say you have an electron gas, the number of ways to arrange these electron gas is way smaller than what you expect if they were all different. And that affects things like temperature, you know, like thermophysics, and thermophysics ultimately is the counting of possibility. So it will affect things like temperature, the heat capacity, you know, how temperature changes as you inject energy into it and all that jazz. So these are measurable facts that we can verify.
Okay, that makes sense. So you're saying based on theory and experiment together, you find out that this indistinguishability property holds up, right?
Yeah. And the thing is, like, if two things are the same, right, then you kind of scratch your head and be like, there's got to be some underlying concept that will just make that clear, right? And that concept is the notion of field. And imagine you're a physicist. You're trying to write physical laws, right? But which one is easier? Do you just write a law for every single particle, which could be different, right? And just be like, they just happen to be the same. That's kind of a cumbersome law. I feel like nature would be smarter than that, right? Or the alternative is you just had one law on one field, and that's it. And it turns out that nature takes full advantage of this simplification. So in your head, it's like, it makes things so much easier if there just is one rule, let's say for the electron field, and every electron that's born from the electron field will inherit that rule, the laws of physics, mm-hmm. right? And it's kind of like a unifying fact.
So you're saying that because of this indistinguishability property, in addition to this indistinguishable property, it's much easier to say like particles originate from this like abstract notion of a field, and they all have the same properties and are governed by the same laws of physics, rather than saying like, oh, you have, you know, this electron here, this electron here. They happen to be the same, but each of them like have their, I guess they follow their own laws of physics, which also happen to be the same.
Yeah. Like if you imagine every particle have their own identity, then in principle, it's plausible that some particles could be exceptional, right? Like one electron might be like, I don't want to follow the pack. I want some other laws of physics. Mm. You know, like we have some individualism, right? That's in principle plausible. Mm. But with this concept of field, it's kind of like a unifier now. Be like, then you, when you write down these mathematical laws, you'd be like, nope. Electrons are all the same. They're from the same objects. They're just manifestation, almost like, I don't know. It's like a hive mind with a good analogy. They're like... they're like swarm of the same hive. You know, they're born from the same swarm, like, if that makes sense. They have one mind, basically.
I see. How do we think about these fields? Are they, like, permeating the entire universe? And it's like, how do I know if a particle exists based on the description of a field? Like, I think of this field as sort of like, I mean, figuratively, like this ocean wave, except in a far more abstract sense. And, yeah, what... How do particles arise from fields?
So this is something that's maybe not very well popularized, right? Like, so Einstein has this idea that massive objects in space-time, you know, Einstein kind of creates this image of geometry where I'm sure we've all seen some popular demonstration of like, oh, if you have like a massive object on like a rubber sheet, the rubber sheet curves, and then other objects will feel the curvature, you know, and kind of move along, right? And that concept kind of carries out actually to everything, right? If you look at the electron field is kind of like wiggles in these electron fields. There's kind of a rubber sheet also for the electron field. So in that way, fields are built into the universe. Like the universe is made of fields. Like sure, like I can feel my hand moving up, down, left, right. That's me feeling the field of space-time, the field of location, right? But in the same way, just feeling that my hand exists, I have electrons and protons, that's me interacting with the field of electrons. Technically, it's a quantum field. These sensations of us existing and just being in the universe, that's us interacting with the field. That's the proof that these fields exist. Indistinguishability is just... kind of icing on the cake that proves that this concept is sensible.
One other question I have about this is that because we talked about the notion like particles aren't necessarily stable, does that mean like fields aren't stable, or how does like fields resolve? I guess like what I'm trying to get into is the different issues we had with particles that we brought up and how fields kind of maybe take care of that or don't.
And this viewpoint actually makes it clearer. Let's say like the Higgs boson people are all familiar with. It's not very stable. It will decay very readily into particles of light, for example. Or they could decay into other things. So then you ask, you know, then like what's up with this Higgs particle? It doesn't even live very long. Does it even exist for real? If you look at it from the perspective of the field, it's not like the fields are getting destroyed. Like if you think of the Higgs boson as just like a little wiggle on the field, it's basically just that one wiggle in one field can be translated into wiggles in other fields. It's kind of like many drums just, you know, playing the same music. It's like in an orchestra, I guess. You know, all the different kinds of drumming or string instrument or whatever you like it. These vibrations of different fields, they can come and go. They can stop vibrating. But that energy will shift from one instrument to the other. And that's very natural. So from that perspective, it's like, you know, particles can come into existence, or they can they can die, they can decay. But fields are really forever in that way. So in some sense, the way particle physicists think about particle physics is that particles are proof that a field exists. So really, we care more about the fields than the particles. Particle is just an instrument of probing what we really care about, the quantum field themselves.
Ah, that makes sense. I guess so what you're saying is that like you can think of particles as disturbance in this wave, or maybe the wave, like a peak of a wave itself, and then that itself can die down and like go into other fields. And you're basically saying for each particle type there is a field that describes that. So if we're talking about like composite particles, which are say like the proton or neutron, which are made up of smaller particles called quarks, how do I think about fields in terms of that? Like there's a proton field and then there's a quark field. Like how does that work? And then,
yeah, I guess a nice visual is kind of like what lasagna, like if you had lasagna, just all the noodly goodness with like layers of like pasta and like meat sauce. I mean, if you're a vegetarian, you have like vegetarian meat sauce, cheese, right? And a proton is kind of like that, right? Like it's like a thick lasagna, where from afar away, it's just one thing. But if you kind of poke inside, it's got layers, right? So when we see like, when we say there's a proton, there's a wiggle in this proton field, when you look a little closer, the proton field is made of a lot of other fields, like gluon field, quark field, and a bunch of different types of quark fields. Right, so it's really a melody. The proton is kind of like an orchestra, a really complicated, I guess, particle music, singing and dancing in the fabric of space time. I guess like that would be that also makes it a little clearer as opposed to kind of like protons like a ball of particles that come in and out. That's a little weird.
Yeah, I guess. Okay, so it seems like in your opinion, would you describe like fields as like an upgrade to particles or something even like greater, like particle 2.0, or would it be like something even bigger than that?
Probably an upgrade, but probably more than just an upgrade, right? Like you're comparing like Notepad to like Microsoft Word. Not that I will endorse Microsoft. Like it's got a lot more going on for fields. So yeah, it's definitely, it's more encompassing, this idea of a field. And on the other hand, it's also profound in a way. Because when you think of particles, it's kind of like an individualistic thinking. They're like, oh, here's a particle. They can bump into each other. They can do things like this. It's not much of a big picture thinking. What do I mean by that? Like in physics, we're always trying to find unifying concepts that can describe more with less. And with fields, it's very natural. If you think particles are coming from fields, first of all, you unify all particles into one field. And then it's also tantalizing to suggest that maybe the different fields, given that they vibrate all at the same time, most of the time, right? Like the gluon field, like the jam with the quark field, right? You know, the photon field, the electromagnetic field tend to vibe with the electron field because they always kind of come together. Then you kind of wonder, are these fields really different? What if maybe these fields are just, maybe there is just ultimately one field. Mm. And like the electron field or the photon field, it might just be one instance of this unifying field. And that is very tantalizing, right? And that's what makes this concept more beautiful and more unified.
I guess to go down that train a little bit more, I'm curious, like going to purely speculative territory now. If we think of it as one unifying field that, and then you have these different offshoots, what would like cause those different offshoots? And maybe that's a very like deep technical question, but like at a high level, how would you like think about the difference if they all derive from one field?
So this is a very interesting train of thought, and people have thought it through. And if you think, if you think of all the possible fields that we have many, right? We have electromagnetic field, we have electron field, we have quark field, gluon field, and many different fields. And you ask, like, which one of these fields should be like the boss of all of them, right? Like the leader of the pack. You ask this natural question. And it's clear that gravitational field is the leader. Because think of it this way. You know, like you have these natural groupings, right? Because like I mentioned before, like the electromagnetic field like to jam with the electron field, right? The electron field is not going to hang out with the gluon field because it doesn't have color charge. They can't vibrate together in some coherent fashion. But everything has energy. And like Einstein said, gravity interacts with all energy. So gravity, the gravitational field is kind of like the conductor in the house. Like it knows about every single field. It knows about every player in the orchestra. So if you follow that route, then you say, well, if I were to unify them all, then they must all be some offshoot of gravitational field. And just for some reason, one another, some of them might get isolated. I don't know, like maybe they don't become friends because of some... and these will have to be gravitational issues. I mean,
wow, that is really interesting. I guess so. You're saying all these could potentially be an offshoot of gravity,
right? Yeah, and indeed, we do have a toy model, you know, that makes it work. And I'm sure our listener might have heard of it. It's called string theory. That's literally what it does. It's saying that there are these string fields. And gravity is the boss. You know, it's all gravity. Gravity comes out of it. And all the other fields could also come out of it. So that's one possibility.
Wow. That is extremely tantalizing. I guess in the small amount of time that we have left, I wanted to ask you, is there like maybe like high level two questions? One is like, is there anything like that would cause the notion of fields to break down themselves, where like fields themselves may not be an adequate description? And then the last thing is like, what message do you want to leave with the audience?
So, I mean, sure. In some sense, we kind of upgraded particles a little bit and talk about fields. But still, if you listen to our previous episode, that space-time is doomed, the same issue kind of still applies here because, you know, space-time is made of, in some way, space-time fields, right? Like gravitational field, same thing, right? So if everything is made of these gravitational constructs, then they kind of all have that inherent issue. So in that way, it's plausible that fields might actually be emergent from something else. But that something else, we really have no clue. But the one thing we know is that fields definitely do exist. They've been tested to great precision. And in fact, every measurement that we do about electrons, protons. Well, here's the fact, right? What is the proof that fields exist? It's the fact that every time we measure the property of protons, let's say the mass of protons, it stays the same, right? We measure the mass of electron. It stays the same, at least very close enough. So, and all the measurement in particle physics has always been ultimately about fields. So they are definitely known to exist and confirmed to exist.
That makes sense. Okay. Yeah, no, that makes sense. Since these are dependent on space-time, it would make sense that it breaks down if the notion of space-time itself is also a bit bunk, which we did cover in a previous episode a while back. So if any of you are interested in checking that out, you can check that out. We're basically almost at time. Is there anything you want to leave the audience with?
Yeah, I guess got some closing statement. I mean, I guess a Corecast tradition. We always want to come back with some life lessons. You know, I think this concept, I like this concept of fields. I mean, in some sense, it humbles you a little bit. We all like to think we're individuals in some ways. But look, Sahil, the electron in my hand is exactly the same as the electrons in your hand. And the same thing for the protons with neutrons. In some sense, if you break us down to our constituents, we are nothing but just made of the same thing. Like what's important is just that amount of configuration, like how we're configured together and that the interactions that we, you know, kind of accumulated over time. And that humbles you a little bit because at the end, kind of we're all cut from the same cloth in some ways, right?
Yeah. Like,
even you and I, and even to this table, like, well, pretty similar material. And at the end, if you really like this space-time thought where all the fields are cut from the same space-time field, then it's even more, it has even more grandeur, right? It's like we are cut from the same stuff, our space-time itself. And I would say if there's anything in physics that's more like a kind of deity, it will be gravity, right? It's the big boss. It knows everything. In some ways, if I'm also part of that, you know, that's humbling and also kind of an interesting thought. You know, in some ways, we are all kind of divine in that way.
I feel that we're going slightly on the non-duality train with this.
Do you feel elevated by all this talk about divinity, divineness? But yeah.
Well, that's
back on the religion talk, but law of physics here.
No, I like it. I like this, how we're going to end this episode. So with that note, I want to thank everybody for joining us, and we'll see you all next week.
Yeah. See you all.
Bye. Yeah. Bye.